Chapter 20, Chris. The 1-800 name rang directly into his home and rang and rang. It rang in the middle of the night, jarring him out of sleep. Most wanted more information about the show they'd seen earlier that night. Nobody seemed to have information. Everybody seemed to want it. At 6 in the morning, he gave up, drank a pot of coffee, and watched the phone. It didn't ring for hours. At 10 after 9, the phone rang again. The caller said, "I want to talk to someone who's responsible for that stupid news program last night." "Well," Chris said, "the thing is, you are." He listened to a silence on the line. "Oh, I am?" "Yes, you are. My name is Chris Chandler, and I wrote, produced, researched, and otherwise put that story together." "Well, it was a piece of garbage, man." "Everybody's a critic." "I can't believe you bought those lines about that guy, Sidney G. Man, he is such a jerk. He's a total liar. How could you have bought all that trash?" "Actually, I didn't."
"You didn't?"
"No." "You didn't believe he thought up that whole thing?"
"No."
"Then why did you run that stupid story?"
"Well, it's like this. I know he's a liar, but what good does it do to say so? I got nothing to go by. I don't really know. I was hoping somebody who actually knows something would help me call him a liar." Chris did not feel inclined to believe he had such a person on the line, or, suddenly, that he likely ever would.
"Well, I know something, and I say he's a liar."
"You know where he got this idea?"
"Yeah, he got it from me."
"Oh, right, kid. I see. It's not all Sidney G's idea. He's just a lying jerk. You thought the whole thing up? You deserve all the credit?"
"Okay, so you're the real hero, and I should do a show about you?"
"No, I didn't think it up. I just paid it forward. I just found Sidney G in an alley in Addis Cadro, and I tried to help him. I told him about the movement."
Chris felt a little tingle behind his ears. Addis Cadro. Stella had said Sidney hid out in Addis Cadro when things got too hot. But he hadn't mentioned that in the story because he didn't want Sidney to know he'd ever talked to her.
You know, what's your name?"
"Matt."
"Matt, I'm sorry, Matt, if I was being a little rude. All night I've been up talking to people who know less than I do about all this. So, listen. You don't happen to know how this thing got started, do you?"
"Only that it didn't start with that Sidney G."
"And you don't know who it was that paid it forward to you?"
"Well, yeah, of course I know that. Her name was Ida Greenberg."
Wait just a second, okay, Matt? I have to get a pen. I have to get a whole lot of information before you hang up. Don't hang up, okay?"
When he got back with the pen, just before he wrote down the information, Chris said, "One more thing I don't get. If this Sidney G is such a jerk and a liar, which I agree he is, why did he pay it forward? But I don't know why I'm asking you. You probably don't know."
"I got a theory."
"Let's hear it."
"Because I told him not to."
"You think he did it because you told him not to?"
"Yeah, I said I didn't want him to touch it. My theory is nobody tells Sidney G what he can and can't touch."
Chris sat baking for a moment at the curb. Addis Cadro was hot, unbelievably hot. The guy who rented him the Ford said this was unseasonable, like that should somehow help. Chris had rented the Fairmont at the San Luis Obispo Airport. It felt boxy and strange, like something his father would drive. It did not have air conditioning. He checked the address again, the one that Mrs. Greenberg's neighbor had given him. It was all the way across town from Mrs. Greenberg's home. Supposedly the address of a son, the sole surviving heir. He shut down the engine and walked up to the door. He knocked. Waited. Knocked. He heard the sound of a small, high-revving engine, like a power mower.
He couldn't tell if it was coming from the backyard of his house or the house next door. He walked around to the back and looked over the ancient wood fence. A man in his 40s was cutting the grass. He wore a sleeveless white t-shirt and tight jeans. Chris already didn't like him. He didn't seem like a man who would keep an obsessively neat garden, but that's what Chris saw. Flower beds covered in chips, roses trimmed and tied back. Not one blade of crabgrass on the lawn. Seemed this guy could tend his yard, but not himself. Chris called hello a few times, but couldn't make himself heard over the roar. He leaned on the fence and waited, feeling sweat creep down the nape of his neck and run down his back. When the man finally saw Chris out of the corner of his eye and looked up, Chris waved his arms. The man stopped and cut the motor, leaving just a humming echo in Chris's ears and a welcome silence. "I'm looking for Richard Greenberg. Would you happen to be him? What'd you want?" "I just wanted to ask you a few questions about your late mother." Richard snorted. "Not exactly my favorite topic."
"Why's that?"
"I got my reasons."
"Because she didn't leave you anything?"
"What do you know about that? Hey, who are you anyway? You some kind of friend of hers?"
"Yeah, all right. She stiffed me when she died. You know that much. Left me $1.
Left the rest of her life insurance to these people she hardly knew. That's what kind of swell lady my mother was.
What do you want to know and why?"
That's what I wanted to talk about. Her will.
What about her house?
Did she own it?"
"Her and the bank. She left me in the cold, I'll tell you. $1. Now I gotta live over this guy's garage and do his garden so he'll give me a break on the rent, which kind of ironic. Because I think the reason she stiffed me was that she got mad at me because I didn't do her garden. I figure this, like, Ida's revenge."
"What exactly is your stake in this?"
"I'm just a reporter looking into a story. It seems she was passing on some kind of, I'm not sure how to explain it, like a chain letter, but with deeds instead of letters. I don't know nothing about it. I got no idea why she did it."
He turned quickly and started back to his mower. Chris reached into his pocket and pulled out the photocopy Matt had made for him, the letter.
"I'll tell you why she said she did it."
Richard turned back.
"Said to who?"
"One of the people she left the money to." He moved closer again.
"That crazy cat lady?"
"No, the kid from the grocery store."
"Oh, right. That was so rich. What a slap in the face. I've been her son for over 40 years. These two little teenage strangers bag her groceries and they get my money?"
He ripped the photocopy out of Chris's hand. Chris watched him read silently for a few seconds.
"I don't trust that he would use it the right way. That's a good one. I would have invested it in eating. That's such a lie. She was mad about the garden."
He threw the letter up into the air. The pages fluttered onto the still uncut grass.
"I said I'd do it. She finally paid some kid to. Said she didn't pay him. He did it for free. Yeah, right. Kids love to do that. She was obsessed with that garden. She never loved me that much. I gotta finish here."
He walked away from the fence again.
"Excuse me, can I have my letter back?"
Richard ignored him and pulled the string on the lawnmower. The noisy engine jumped to life. Chris pulled himself up to the top of the fence and scrambled over, rescuing the letter just before Richard could run it through the shredder.
"Did you talk to the lady at the cat shelter?"
Terry asked.
"Yeah, she really didn't know Mrs. Greenberg at all."
"I really didn't either. I just ran her groceries over the scanner." Terry stood in the alley behind the grocery store. Chris squatted with his back up against the building, his eyes closed against the heat and glare. A light breeze had come up, and even the breeze felt hot.
"I don't know," she said. "I wish I could help you."
"Did you talk at all when she came in?"
"Barely.
She usually complained about her arthritis. She was nice, though. I make her sound like she wasn't, but she was. Nobody likes to listen to someone complain about aches and pains. But I figured she had to tell somebody, you know. She was lonely. Her husband died. So I listened. Now I'm glad I did. I mean, for $8,000, she could have told me about every ache she ever had.
Do you remember the last time you saw her?
Kind of. She was in a good mood.
What did she say?
Terry let her head drop back and closed her eyes. She shook her head.
It was such a long time ago, you know?
Okay, I understand. Look, I'm staying at the Motel 6. Maybe another day, maybe two. I don't know. Maybe I'm wasting my time and I should go home. But if you think of anything, if anything comes back to you, give me a call, okay?
And you think of something later? He handed her one of his cards. She slipped it into her shirt pocket.
I guess my break's over. Sorry I wasn't much help.
You were as much help as anyone else, he said, and walked back to his rented car, to his rented oven.
He found her house. That was easy. The tricky part was explaining to himself why he was even bothering. A dead woman's house wasn't likely to tell much of a story. The sun had dipped to a slant, the day's heat broken, but barely. He stood in front of the little blue-gray house and admired the garden, perfectly tended. Someone new must be living here now. He knocked on the door. No reply. He sank onto the top porch step and began to feel stuck. His motivation to leave drained away. He could go get dinner, but he wasn't hungry. Why go back to the motel when he wouldn't sleep? A boy rode down the street on a heavy old bike delivering the afternoon paper. He didn't throw one at Mrs. Greenberg's house. Maybe the bank still owned it. But banks don't keep up the yard work, do they? Maybe whoever lived here didn't take the afternoon paper. Chris took his MasterCard out of his shirt pocket and stared at it, tapped it on his knee. He'd used it for a plane ticket and a motel and a rental car. And for what? A woman came out of the house across the street to fetch her paper. Chris sprang to his feet.
"Excuse me!"
he called and sprinted over. It seemed to alarm her.
"Excuse me! Can I just ask you a question about this house across the street?"
"Old Mrs. Greenberg's house?"
"Right. Did you know her well?"
"Not very."
She crossed her arms, uncrossed them, tugged at her house dress nervously.
"My husband doesn't think we should get too friendly with the neighbors."
"Is someone living in the house now?"
"No, it hasn't been sold yet. The bank owns it."
"Who's keeping it up so nicely?"
"I really couldn't say. If you'll excuse me."
She backed inside and closed the door quickly. Chris took a deep breath and walked back to Mrs. Greenberg's front porch. He stood looking through the front windows. Sheets covered the furniture. Everything seemed coated with a fine layer of dust. He collapsed on her steps again. He should just go home. He knew that now. He couldn't interview a dead woman. And even if he could, where would it lead him? Someone paid it forward to her. Maybe she didn't know that person's name. Maybe she was part of the 12th generation or the 112th. If he was the best investigative reporter on the whole planet, and he wasn't, he could never trace it all the way back to its roots, not without some kind of written record. The paperboy came back and dropped his bike on Mrs. Greenberg's perfect lawn. He came up the walk toward Chris. Chris waited, figuring the kid was heading for him or had something to say to him, but he took a detour around to the side yard. As he walked by, Chris saw he was carrying a bag of dry cat food. When he came back, he had a pair of hedge clippers.
"Hi,"
Chris said as he walked by.
"Hi."
The boy began trimming the hedge that ran like a fence against the neighboring property. It wasn't looking too seedy to begin with. When he'd worked his way closer, Chris said, "You're the one keeping this place up?"
"Yeah."
"Who pays you to do it?"
"Nobody."
"Why do you do it then?"
"I don't know. Just because."
He furrowed his brow and concentrated on his work for a moment. Then he looked up and said, "I don't think she would like to see it get all ratty again. I don't know if she can see. What do you think?" About what?
Do you think that when somebody's dead, they can still look down like that?
Chris wrestled with the question for a moment, then shook his head. He'd never really pinned down what he believed in that respect.
I guess not, but I'm not sure.
No, I'm not sure either. I figured it's better to be safe.
So you knew her?
Yeah.
Did you know her well?
The boy stopped his work, left the clippers hang straight down from one hand, and scratched his nose with the other.
Not real well, I guess. We used to talk.
About what?
Oh, I don't know. Stuff. Football. This project I was doing for school. She was going to help me with this project, but then she died.
Chris rose to leave. He could talk to every living human in the city and not stumble on anyone who really knew. But he had to try one more time, because in the morning, he now knew he'd be flying home.
You wouldn't happen to know anything about her will?
Her what?
Her will. Why she left money to certain people.
Oh, that kind of will.
No, I don't even know she had a will.
Yeah, I didn't figure you would.
Well, goodbye.
See ya.
Chris sat in the car for a few minutes, watching the boy work, thinking it was odd for a boy that age to work for free when he had death as the perfect excuse to get out of it. Then he wondered if Mrs. Greenbird was looking down.
If you are, he thought, how about a clue? How about letting me see something here?
But all he saw was a boy cutting a hedge. He started the motor and drove away.
From the diary of Trevor,
I don't think even one single person has paid it forward. I guess it was a stupid idea. A bunch of people said it was stupid, but mostly just the people I think are stupid, like Arnie and Marianne and a couple of other kids in class. And Joe, who's my friend, but he didn't say it was stupid. He didn't say anything, but he had that look on his face like he didn't get it. So maybe he thought it was stupid, but he was just too nice to say so. Anyway, they were right and I was wrong. Nobody did it. Only, I think Mrs. Greenberg would have, if she could. And Reuben wants to. I know he does. But he just can't think of anything that big. Here's the part nobody seems to get. It doesn't even have to be that big. I mean, not really. I mean, it might just seem big, depending on who you do it for.